Thank you, Mario, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to present to you some work that I did with a fellow graduate student of mine, Andras Tack, and it's called an Analysis of Network Configuration Artifacts. If you were here last year, you might have seen a work in progress session about this where I was in the middle of doing this work. So the motivation and goals of this work are basically that I've worked in networks for a number of years and realized that, and we all that work in networks realize that the network needs to be reliable and it's evolving. And I was in the process of studying the software development process and realized there was a lot of parallels between the two. So similarly to we want increased quality software, we want our networks to be more reliable. There's an expectation for both of them for higher reliability. There's an increasing number of skilled practitioners in both. We've got a lot of network administrators here, like we have, for instance, programmers or software developers in that realm. And there's also an increasing level of automation that's wanted then so that we can reduce times to recovery after failure in both these problem domains. However, in the area of network management, this is not... Excuse me. I put it on autopilot. It started changing the slides for me. Okay, so however, in the management of networks and the internet, it's not received similar attention. There's not a whole area of computer sciences studying the operation, really. Places like LISA here, at least the academic portion and the technical sessions are one of the primary places we do that. And there's not whole conferences devoted just to that as there are in the programming languages area and software development. So what Tack and I proposed when we're studying this is to do an analogy-based analysis based on the fact that we can compare and contrast or liken these two things to each other. Networks are like software systems, so deploying a large network is like building a large software system. Network engineering is like software engineering. They're similar disciplines. We call them both engineering. We expect them to obviate failures. And lastly, network operators, in some regards, are like programmers. And I'll show you in the course of this work how I think that's the case. So, of course, a computer network, this is one example computer network. It happens to be the one I'll be showing you today. In the paper, we study two computer networks. This one is a campus network. The other one would be a service provider network. And for the sake of time, I'll keep using this campus network as an example. What you see here, and I'm not expecting you to be able to read the details, but in the center triangle there, we've got the core of the network. It happens to be today a 10 gigabit core. There's routers at each of these, what we call super nodes there. And then you see a fiber plant infrastructure of 10 gig and 1 gig links going out to other routers and switches. Here we're seeing the core and distribution layer of a typical IP network. What you're not seeing here, there's approximately 200 pieces of equipment shown here. Each one of those boxes at the end of the links is a router or switch. What you're not seeing here is the access layer. In this particular network, there's approximately 3,500 to 3,800 pieces of equipment in the access layer. So it's a fairly large network supporting something like 50,000 people, 90,000 edge ports turned up in this network. And in the course of doing this, there's something, just like when you develop software, there's artifacts that lay around there that are produced in the process of running this network. So what do I mean by artifacts? Well, an artifact, just the word means an object created by humans, especially one remaining from a particular period. In the case of software development, artifacts are things like core files when a program crashes. You got the core file there. You can discover, you could reverse engineer something about the software system if you have the core file. You have the tome that is the source code itself. Usually, for a lot of systems, you have the source code available. You could certainly study the software and learn things about how the software is developed. You might have, for instance, a trouble ticket system if people were logging problems with a production piece of software. And in the network realm, then, what kind of artifacts do we have? Well, we have network performance measurements. We have tools like MRTG and RRD tool that record the performance on the network, and you can imagine having link measurements over time for all those links I showed in that network earlier. We've got things like network management systems that capture the topology of the design of the network, and they also sometimes capture policy, and you can discover things about how the network was created and is operated by the policies that are stored in the network management system. We certainly have trouble tickets. People call help desks and say that this part of the network isn't working, so you've got points in time that can possibly be correlated with activities on the network. These are all artifacts. There's pieces of information laying around that as a side effect of creating and operating a network. The one that I'm going to focus on in this talk is the network device configurations themselves. So when we have a piece of software, there's source code files that represent a humanly readable or programmer readable version of what that software is intended to be doing. And in networks, we have routers and switches and firewalls, and these have a text configuration that we usually store in a file. You can call it a configuration file. So in software, of course, when people are maintaining software, that a modern practitioner would say, it would be ridiculous to maintain a piece of software without using a source code management system so that you know who made a change and what change they made, and you can revert back to previous changes in your source code. Similarly, in the state of our networks today, the practitioners use a source code management system, very often borrowed from the programming languages area or from the software development area, like RCS or CVS or Subversion, and they store the configuration files for these devices. They're stored both for backups of the configuration, so if you lose one of the devices, you can reproduce it on demand, and also for communicating changes to your coworkers. If you have a team, you want to know why something's behaving a certain way, somebody was out, they can go back and look at these configurations to see what's going on. The popular tool Rancid is one that people use with Cisco equipment and others to scrape the configurations down and store them in this fashion. So focusing on those network device configurations, let's look at our network again with an eye to, well, what do we have here in terms of an artifact for network configurations? So each one of these devices then has, we can associate a file with it. I said there was something like 200 shown here and 3,800 pieces of switching equipment off the map that I didn't show because of the detail. So we have approximately 4,000 configuration files that represent the current state of this network. And we can archive those over time, keeping deltas between them. The switch configs and the router configs and the firewall configs, they're all written in. In this case, I'll be using examples of Cisco IOS. They could be any configuration language, but basically some humanly readable declarative programming language essentially that's saying how, instead of a general purpose computer, how a very specific kind of computing device, a router or switch, can behave. And it's just, we just write statements in there that describe how it should behave. So the two networks we studied and reported in the paper, and the difference between the diagrams shown in the paper and what I'll show you right now is you'll see side-by-side representations graphically of the campus network and the service provider network as if you wanted to compare them. Here we'll just look at the campus ones because I want to show you more what the tool can do rather than comparing and contrasting those two networks. So in the campus network we studied here, over a period of 5 years, this network was completely redeployed with new equipment. In the course of doing that, a full 343 people were capable or allowed to make changes to this network and configure it. 64 of those were super users, meaning they could do anything. Over the course of 5 years, 64 people were the network engineers that designed and ran this network. At the time of the study, we had 3,839 devices or configuration files in the network. And on those files, the revisions that were to the configuration over time that were recorded in a source code management system or a configuration repository were approximately 130,000 revisions over those 5 years. So there's a lot of artifacts here. The configuration files themselves represented a full 2.9 million lines of configuration. In the service provider network, which was a regional network, we examined it over a period of approximately 10 years, and this was just limited by the length of time that we had the configuration stored in this disciplined way. With the checkpoints, and during that time, 31 employees or network practitioners or operators had performed operations on that network. There was a total of 500 devices, and this is because these are all routers, and you can imagine in 500 different municipalities or cities or the locations that it served. And then over the period of those 10 years, something like 42,000 revisions were done for 164,000 lines of code. So there's a lot of stuff to digest here. Obviously, we just don't want to peruse this, so let's see what we can do with tools to analyze this automatically. So what we're going to do here is mine the source code management repository that is the configurations of these devices. Well, why are we going to do this? Well, it's been successful in the programming language community. One of the things that Andres and I learned in studying this was there's a whole field of study and a bunch of improvements to things like IDEs and the quality of software and the practitioner behaviors, like what days of the week is it best for a programmer to make changes or worse to make changes? How do you detect code clones, like people using the same kinds of code fragments? So a lot of success has been had in the PL community by just mining these software source code repositories. So much so, in fact, that there's whole workshops that are just dedicated to mining source code repositories. So we want to see if we can leverage all these tools that this other community's already written that we can just get for free off the internet and apply them in this network and system administration domain. And then, well, what do you want to do with this? We want to visualize and, you know, somehow digest this information, visualize it, present it so it's understandable, and elucidate basically how the network was being operated. And ultimately, we want to be able to convey it. Let's say you bring a new manager that manages this group that's responsible for the network. They can understand it more quickly if we can present it to them in a visual fashion. And also, we want to improve the practice, like find efficiencies or inefficiencies here, the efficiencies that should be shared or the inefficiencies that maybe we could point tools at to improve the operation. So how are we going to do this? Well, we're going to convert the existing configurations that are stored over time in some sort of custom mode. In this case, my revisions were stored in RCS because they introduced the system in 1997. So that was the revision control system that we used, but another common system would be CVS, the concurrent version system, or today Subversion is really popular. So we're going to take those and convert them into the format that a programmer would use. And in this case, we converted our RCS configs into a CVS repository so that it was the input that the tools wanted. Then we're going to use an existing tool, specifically one called StatCVS and another one called CVS to CL, CVS to changelog, that are going to look at the configurations, and they're going to look at the explanations that the practitioners supplied and the points in time and make conclusions about them. Say, for instance, you change 5 pieces of network equipment over a period of 10 minutes, and you supply, for instance, the same description. This was a side effect of a change of upgrading to Cisco IOS version 12.2, and the syntax changed a little bit. This tool, CVS to CL, would say those 5 changes are all the same thing. They're one related change, similarly to if you go put a fix in 5 source code files that was really the same fix. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. And then, so once we have this and start analyzing it sort of 9 ways from Sunday, say, well, how does it look over time? And I'll present this to you graphically. What percentage of each of the configuration files was maintained by which practitioner? Then we want to perform other static file analyses. In programming language, what a static analysis is you're not actually running the software and seeing what it's doing at runtime. You're saying, I'm just looking at these artifacts that are just laying there, and what can I determine from that? So the static analysis would just look at the source code, where a dynamic analysis might actually run the program and, say, run it under a debugger control or something. So we're not going to do an active test of the network to determine its topology or how it might have been deployed. We're going to just look statically at the configuration files. And the things we're going to do there is look at, for instance, the configuration stanzas. These languages are paragraph oriented, and we'll take a look at that if you're not familiar with the language. And we'll look at things like the revision lifetimes. Like, if you make a change on a network device, how long does it last? How long does it before it has to be revised? Because these are the things that change your workload as a network operator. So let's look at a configuration file example. So this is a configuration for, I believe, one switch in one of our buildings. And the kinds of things you have in this artifact, I have this stuff highlighted in blue at the top. This is the global, like I would call a global stanza of the Cisco Internet Operating System. What version of the code that should be able to understand the commands in here. Some other global things about how I wanted to do dates and times. Some site-specific attributes, like, for instance, the naming convention for the device itself. In this institution, they used an S prefix to mean that it was a switch. They put a building name in there. They put a number that showed where it was in which IDF or MDF, which position it was in the stack. So all this is information that hints at the structure of the network. Looking further down in the file, a very typical stanza or paragraph would be an interface configuration, because you have a router with one uplink and, say, 48 downlinks. One of the downlink interfaces might look like this. So we've got a keyword like interface, and then that paragraph is indented, and all these config commands have to do with that interface. Another thing in terms of a really interesting artifact here is a humanly supplied description. I mean, this is basically the operator saying this interface is, I anonymized the description, but you could imagine saying it's serving, you know, a particular office or something like that. And then the last example of what kinds of things are in this, just like programmers, network operators consider the structure, and they use tools to generate portions of these configurations. So here I'm showing you an access list at the top here, where this highlighted in green remark is showing that this access list is a kind of, it's drawn from a library. It's really an access list called NDHCP for when I want no DHCP. That access list itself, pasted in the context of the configuration, is a standalone entity, and meaning I might distribute that same access list across 4,000 devices. So this is like library code, essentially, if you were in software. And then there's another access list down here, and I'm just pointing out again that there can be comments in these things. So you've got a lot of really valuable information that humans have entered into this, so if you can mine it, you can understand more about the network. So let's start looking visually at, I took all those configurations, all I did was convert them from RCS into CVS, which is just putting in the proper directory structure, and ran the CVS log command. Now I have one file that is a summary of 5 years of this network's activity, and I pump it into a freely available tool called StatsCVS. The graphs I'm going to show you, I apologize for them not being readable, some of the details, because they're small, but I'm actually showing you the exact output of that tool. So this would be presented to you on a web page if you're running StatsCVS, and you could just run it every day and see the current state of your network. So what we have on the vertical axis here is the number of files, and we said there's one file per device, so this is the number of devices starting at 0 and 4,000 at the top. And this is the growth over time, where the time span horizontally represents 10 years. So what we can see here is if I'm introducing this network to you, you can see that approximately in May 2003, this network was starting to be deployed, and it ramped up fairly quickly, had a very steep incline for a while, and then it's kind of plateauing there. And at the end of this study, which is something like January 2009, it's still climbing up in terms of the number of devices. So we can see that we're looking at the evolution of a system over about 5 years. Another way we can look at the information in the repository is by the number of lines of configuration. In programming, you'd say lines of code, based on the topology in the network. So we talked about that naming convention. The naming convention in this network tells us what part of the topology it's in. Is it in the core? Is it in the access layer? Is it in the periphery? Is it in the distribution layer? So the large pink portion of this pie is the access layer. This is exactly what you'd expect. I said there was this, you know, through to 3,700 devices off the edge. A very large portion, something like maybe 60 or 70% of it, is represented by configuration of the access layer. Then getting smaller here, this gold portion is the wireless deployment. And then nextly, firewalls management, and then distribution and core are the blue and the red slices there, which is exactly what you'd expect in terms of maybe tens of core devices, hundreds of distribution devices, and thousands of access layer devices. So we can see that it's a typically proportioned three-tier IP network. If we look at that time series graph again, but this time break it out by the what I call the module. In a software system, the module would be, for instance, a portion of a system that maybe is the user interface, and another portion that's a computational part or part of the data file operations. You know, subdirectories basically. In a network, the modules would be these functional components. And the ones that we chose here, again, they're the core from left to right at the bottom here. So it's the core, the distribution layer, the access layer, management devices, just meant to do out-of-band management. They're not part of they don't carry production traffic. They're just used to manage it when it's not accessible. And then the gold's wireless, and this cyan color is the firewall. So looking at this time series again, it starts off in like 2003, and the green ramps up. That's the access layer being deployed. So we can see that's a really active portion. You're continuing to push out towards the edge of this network as it's being deployed. The gold is wireless. So you can see the wireless initiative came in there like January 2006, and it's also part of an access layer, just a wireless access layer, and goes up like that. And these other portions that have fewer number of devices, they sort of have a continuous increase, but they flatten out over time, which is what you'd expect of a distribution and core layer in a typical large network like we showed here. So, okay, that's just looking at the evolution over time. Now let's see if we can discover something about the people that are operating this network, or the actual, you know, super users and network engineers themselves. So here we're looking at the size, meaning the amount of configuration lines, and to what person they're attributed. If I have these deltas over time, I can go back to any current line in the configuration and say, you know, Mario put that in, or Ian put that in, or whatever, and you can find out who it's attributed to. So the interesting thing here, remember I said there was something like 300 people that had managed this network, so this isn't a very useful pie chart for most of them, because most people have hardly done anything, but the top five, full like 75% of this pie is taken up by five people. And the ones that's labeled like Kevin here in green. So one of the phenomena we saw both in this network and in the service provider network is the way that we're managing and we're using the people that can operate this, they're in different roles such that there's this dramatic difference, even though they might have the same title in terms of the amount of code that they touch and have supplied in the configurations. Now, I said this isn't very useful because we're seeing 300 names here or something. Let's look at it a different way. Let's take those practitioners and put them in the groups to which they report. And in this particular campus network, there was a group called Network Engineering, and that's this pink portion. So these are people that typically you'd call network engineers. And then the gold portion here were contractors. This was a multi-year deployment of millions of dollars of equipment. They brought in contractors to help with a portion of it. And you can see the contractors, for the time they were there, did a significant amount of the work, such that even today, and today's the end point of this, they were the ones that had last touched a fairly significant amount of the lines of configuration. And then we have the network operations center shown in bright yellow, field services, the people that actually carry the gear out to places and do the initial setup in green, and then some other people here called authorized agents in security, and we'll talk about what those are. These are kind of people in the lands that are, they're not full-time networking people, but they have permission to change portions of the network. And then the security people, you know, going in when there's some stopgap situation. So they're not representing a lot of the configuration, but they are powerful operators in the network. So what else can we look at? We can look at the people. We can look at, because we've got these timestamps for when all these changes were made, well, when do the commits happen? When are changes committed to this database? If the modus operandi in this network group is that you make a change to a device, it's your responsibility to pull the configuration down and check it into this repository, then we have a fairly accurate representation of when the changes are made. And these are, on the vertical axis, we've got the number of commits in total. And on the horizontal axis, we've got the hours from the first hour to the 24th hour of the day. So it's just after midnight over here and just before midnight on the far side. So what we see is something that you might expect in network operations. We see, you know, 2 in the morning is the least amount of changes. There's starting, you know, changes 6, 7 in the morning, and then we ramp up to peaks both in the late morning, like 10 to 12. We see people go to lunch. And then we see, and this is averaged over the entire 5 years, we see a lot of activity in the afternoon trailing off at 16 and 1700 hours at the end of the workday. And then there's still a significant amount of work going on into the, you know, 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 11 p.m. And this is what you expect in a large production network because people schedule outside of typical business operations. But a lot of the changes you make in a network are not service affecting in broad scales. So that's why so much of the stuff can happen in the middle of the day. And in the paper, you can compare and contrast this between different networks, and you can get an idea of the work culture and what's expected of the people operating this. If someone's coming into this and they see, well, a full 10% of the changes are made after 10 p.m. at night, you might be expected that you're going to be on a pager and you're going to be working at 10 p.m. at night. So what other things can we see in here? I said one of the things where the systems, these revision control systems, of course, you check in a change and you're asked to explain what the change was. Well, what are the common comments that people put in here? Well, the most common comment is initial revision. That's something that came out of the system itself. But then we see the next comment is test. And this is one. So like this was I wasn't too pleased with this, that 1.5% of the changes checked in were test. But what I found out was going on is people were using the production network to test things at the very edge of the network. So if you have a network operator that's testing how we can set attributes on an Ethernet switch port, if it's at the very edge of the network, that's okay. Because it's not going to be service affecting because it's not in the core or something like that. So that's actually legitimate testing activity where you don't have a whole other network to test with. The third comment, though, ASDF, this is the home row on the keyboard, ASDF, that people just type across. And what we're seeing here is basically non-compliance with a system that's trying to inform us about what's going on. And the reason why the person probably allowed themselves to do this is because they are a one-man show. They could be off in one of the 300 or 400 departments on this campus. There's no one else there thinking that's going to consume this information. I'm just putting it there for my own sake, and I'm tired, and I'm just going to put this in. So we see things like that. We also see canned comments like newer bulk check-in, where someone's automated something but not put a particularly informative message in there. So this gets at, well, you might want to change your culture a little bit or at least educate the people that are allowed to do this to say that these comments are visible outside of just the time that they're putting them in. So yet another way that we can look at this data is we can say, well, on an author-by-author basis, and this is by the groups of authors, again, like network services and these authorized agents, how much work did each of them do as measured by the number of revisions they did, the lines of configuration that they're responsible for, the number of lines they code added, or the number of lines they changed. And so we see that something like 47% of the revisions and 83% of the lines of configuration are in the network engineering group. That makes some sense. The next group, these authorized agents, are the ones that I said are out there at the very periphery of the network. They're LAN admins, basically. They have a limited scope of control. They're not super users, but they're doing a lot of the work, 30% of the work. That's great, because now we know in this environment that 30% of the configuration changes to be done are being pushed out to people in these other departments, and they're not on the backs of the central network services people. And it also means that the LAN administrators are enabled to do a full 30% of the changes without having to call on the network engineering people to do this. The anomaly comes in with a third point here. The system itself, it says, did something like 8.4% of the revisions. And what we mean by system here is this is actually the software that they use to do the check-ins or whatever. And this was a complete surprise. So more than the network operations center, the system software itself, which somehow became sentient and is doing network changes. What we found the explanation for this is that in this environment they use basically like an integrated development environment for the network. There's web interfaces that they can do things like, say, if I've got 3,800 switches and I need to push out a code update to all of them, I can use this to push out config commands en masse. I can say make these changes all throughout the campus. Well, you can imagine if there's something like 60 to 300 people making arbitrary changes, and then somebody goes and says, I want to upgrade all of these to a certain version of code or just run some command on them, the system is saying, I don't want to mix these two changes together. Someone's in the middle of something, and I'm going to put something else out. It's still a production network, and it's still operating or whatever. So what the system does is it checks in any difference that it sees before it applies the automated change. So what we found here is that this discipline system is accidentally sort of attributing a bunch of the changes to the system itself. And then why was it so big? Well, the cool thing is, if you want to be expeditious and get all your changes checked in, let's say you're out there and you changed 15 devices, well, one of the practitioners, the network operators, discovered that the system itself had the side effect that if he went in and put a no-op command and just said, don't make any change, just say end, that the system will automatically check it in and not ask him for an explanation. So basically what we found is an operator was using the tool in a more efficient way than we even envisioned, and was using a side effect of the way that it was designed to get these changes to be checked in. And now we have a recipe for how to improve the tool, really enforce that someone supplies an explanation for these, or try to give them a better process for checking in things en masse. So that's just looking at the sort of lay of the land for the network. Now let's go further, and like they would when the software engineering, and say, well, what can we say about the amount of work that's involved in doing these changes? Well, let's evaluate the effort that the practitioners put into this. Well, how can we measure the effort? We can look at how often are fixes introduced. Well, we don't know if things are, you know, changes made because of a change to Cisco IOS that required you to make a configuration change. We don't know if just a user request, you know, moved to a different office and that was a change. How often was there something broken? So we're going to try to identify what we call fixes. And I think one of the best ways to identify this is a revision to something that was recently revised. Like, why would you change it again unless it was working correctly? So we're going to look for revisions on top of revisions. How often did the configurations change? So just a measure of the work overall. Are there bad days? I mentioned this earlier. And they found when they did this kind of study with software development, the changes that were checked into software on Friday caused many more bugs than on other days. Is that the case for operational networks? My hypothesis was that it wouldn't be, because operational networks, you're making a change to a network that's running at the time, as opposed to in software development, you're checking something in to something that's going to be released possibly months later. So there's not quite the same immediacy to being sure that the change is good. When we're evaluating the practitioner effort, we can look towards improvements. Can we do, you know, syntax aware analysis, and we'll talk about that a little bit, which portions of the configuration need to be changed most, so that if we're going to write a tool to help you do that, we'll target it towards that area. And then, just to reiterate, how do you direct tool development in general? What kind of tools do you want to do this? So we look at the days of the week, Sunday through Saturday, the middle of the week, Monday through Friday. If I wanted to generalize, the commits pretty much happen all through the week. They're a little lower on Friday. But there's also commits going on Sunday. This is, again, that kind of thing where if we're talking about in the case of an academic campus, less work's going on then, so there's a significant number of changes going on Sunday to try to stay out of the way of the users. Revision lifetimes. So let's look at how do the people make changes in this? Do they make a little change, see if it's not hurting or if it is hurting, and then check it in? Or do they make another change in an iterative fashion to try to correct a problem? So the way we're going to look at this is, from left to right at the bottom, we've got that 5 years or something of operation of this campus network. And the vertical axis here shows from 0 hours or days up to 3.5 days. And the red dots are the network services people. This is a relatively small group. And the purple crosses are these authorized agents. There are hundreds of people out there in the lands that can use this more restricted web interface to make changes. So what we see is, well, the first dramatic thing is it wasn't until about a year in before the authorized agents were allowed to make changes. So that's when you see the purple portions come in. But the first takeaway here is that changes, if you make a revision, a lot of them last well under 4 hours. So it's people making a change, getting it checked in, and then saying, oh, that's not working right. That's one way you can get that kind of behavior. Then a lot of changes last about exactly a day, that 24-hour band, then a 48-hour band, then a 3-day band after that. So what we're seeing is, and this is not, I mean, it was not obvious to me at first, but what you're seeing is people are likely to go home at night and find the problem or fix the problem the next day. So there's a whole bunch of things down there in that in that bottom portion. Very, you know, rapid changes being checked into the system. Let's go look at that. Sort of, this is sort of zooming in to 0 to 10 minutes is the revision lifetime. I made a change on the device and it was changed again in less than 10 minutes. So both for the network services people, which are ostensibly the experts at network operations, and these authorized agents that are not experts but have an interface to help them, they do tons of revisions that last only 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And so we learned something about the nature of the way people operate a production network like this. They really do iterative changes. And if it's convenient for them to check it in, we can build a software system like this that can capture that behavior. And you can decide later if you want to be able to fix that. So just a couple things before we wrap up. We looked at, tried to find a trend in these short revisions. Do they by the day of the week? In this case, the orange is the campus network. Pretty much, I would say, for any day of the week, there's just as likely to be a short revision. So it doesn't seem like we're changing behavior by times of the day. And then when we drill down to the kinds of practitioner, are they network operations people? Are they field services people? Are they these expert network engineers? Which kind of employee is likely to make these short revisions? We see that the two spikes on the weekends, Sunday and Saturday, are the field services people. But this is probably allowable because the field services people are deploying gear that no one's on yet. And it's okay if they make a lot of quick revisions. So that looks really good. And across the rest of the week, there's not really a general trend. You can say, the field services people make more changes that have to be fixed again, but that's probably the nature of their work. And it looks really good. We don't see some of the daily behaviors that you would in a software development environment. One last visualization. Trying to look at something like the average file size, the lines of configuration, is very erratic. And the reason this is because it doesn't make sense to take a heterogeneous network with routers and switches and firewalls and compare them as equal. What happened is, like, towards the end, that big drop, well, this is the wireless deployment. Hundreds or thousands of access points get deployed. They have very small configs, so the average size of a configuration file goes down. So we have to be watchful for things like that so we don't generalize too much. In the service provider network, which I didn't really show you, there wasn't that trend because the devices were homogeneous. Looking at the campus, the revisions on the campus by the type of configuration change they made, a full, you know, something like 90% of them, or 471,000 of these revisions, were interface configuration changes. So that the web interface allows people to change the interfaces both makes that self-fulfilling, but it also means that you're focused on the right thing. If you wanted to target automation after this, allowing people to do VLAN configurations in an automated way or global config changes would be the next most fruitful. So in conclusion, we have varying device types. As I said, the lines of configuration is an erratic metric that's also been found in some software, like across languages. We can see things like group behaviors, which practitioners are the most outstanding in terms of the amount of configuration they're responsible for. We don't want to generalize and say that they're the ones that do the most work necessarily. It just means they're in a different role. Some of them are do a lot of the changes and some do a little bit. We looked at the change times. We looked at user compliance in terms of if you introduce a system like this, do people actually use it? And then we talked about one efficiency that someone found accidentally in the system that you can only see by doing this kind of analysis. And then we could obviously bring up new efficiencies based on what we see here. So the three contributions that I see in this work are, one is we took an initial application of software development analysis techniques and applied them to network operations and see that you can really get tools, just freely available tools, and map this into this other domain so we can catch up with the programming languages community. We saw the beginnings of how you can do use the network operations specific measurements to guide tool development to make better, you know, web interfaces for people to make these changes and stuff, because you see what kind of changes actually have to be made in this production network. And then lastly, this is more strong in the paper, we have two case studies now that if you want to go and deploy a network like of this size, you can go and say, well, here's a paper that says over 5 years, this is the kind of life cycle you see something like 30 employees to operate it, or if you have a regional network that you're going to operate over 10 years with 30 people, this might be the kind of evolution you'd see over time. Where I want to go with this is in the software, we can just go back to the programming languages area and see what things they've figured out. They've figured out there's a concept of code decay. The code only lasts a certain amount of time. It needs to be maintained. Obviously, there's going to be something like that in network configurations as well. People do refactorings. They try to clean up the code. They just write it a different way that's more understandable. Let's try to identify refactorings in the configurations as well so we can differentiate them from meaningful changes in terms of changing the operation of the network. We can look for code clones. Where do people cut and paste and copy the configurations over and over? Because we want to make sure that those are consistently updated, and we might be able to remind someone and say, last time someone did this change, they changed these 10 devices, and this time you only changed these 9. That would raise a flag. We can leverage other artifacts. We only looked at one artifact, just the configuration files themselves. If we look at the performance measurements at the same time, we could correlate the changes with interfaces going down or poorer, better performance. And then lastly, one of my fellow graduate students had a paper in NSDI where he developed what he's calling a complexity metric for the network configs, because you can express, they're very expressive languages even though they're declarative, and you can express the same kind of policies in different ways and with different amounts of complexity, making them either easier or harder to maintain. So he's looking at how can you look at the configuration files and determine how complex they are simply by the way they're written. Thank you, that's all I have. Are there any questions?
Hi, Dave. I got a couple ones. One, you talked about Rancid. One of the things I've always had as a complaint about Rancid is the fact that it doesn't give you the ability to have comments on your check-ins. It doesn't track who did the change, et cetera. Have you thought about how to deal with that? Since Rancid obviously is something that is widely deployed. The other question I had was related to, there was a big disparity in device count versus change count between your campus data and your service provider data. Does your statistics imply that that's largely because your campus data included switches and the service provider data was routers only? I find in general, switches have a lot more churn, routers have a lot less.
Okay, let me respond to the second part first. I think that's the case. What we still saw a steady increase in the service provider network, which is all routers, of the amount of configuration over time. So security things and stuff, it's gotten more complex over 10 years to maintain that network. It's certainly the case that there's so much more activity in the campus network because there is an access layer. In the service provider network, all the stuff that happens at the very periphery, which is a very hot area of changes wherever in networks, that's not represented there. So I think you're right there. The first part about Rancid, I personally don't use Rancid. If in the paper there's a reference to a tool called NetCMS, which is the one that I wrote and I use instead. I was just using that as an example. But basically anything that allows you to scrape the configuration together, what I do is basically make a wrapper around that actually deposits the revision and interacts with the user and asks for it. Probably there's people out there, especially in small environments, that just use Rancid just to copy the configs every once in a while, but really you have to add that extra part in there where it says, I'm going to have the practitioner give me an explanation for why they did this change and then check it in, and it's attributed to their name. Obviously a whole bunch of the analyses I did here were really dependent on that. Well, thanks.